A podcast of the cinema.
Featuring
you, Dave White.
That's right.
Me, Alonzo Duraldi. We are film critics. This is our show.
Yes. What was that deal with the Josie and the Pussycats music coming out of your laptop?
Oh, it was coming out of my phone.
Why was it coming out of your phone?
Because somebody had used it on their Instagram.
Oh.
That was all.
Good soundtrack.
Isn't it?
It is really, it's good. It's a really good soundtrack.
Yeah.
All those songs that are by Josie and the Pussycats.
That's right.
Who was it, actually?
It's Kay Hanley.
Letters to Cleo.
Yeah, okay. And I got to see the actual band.
No, I remember, Kay Hanley, I know. I was not there. But
perform live, which was
I'm sure that was a very exciting moment for you.
It was very exciting. And I was in a crowd of like-minded people. We were all thrilled.
See, okay, so here's the thing. Like-minded people.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I like being with like-minded people.
Sure.
But then sometimes I don't like being with like-minded people if they're liking it too much. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what we're talking about. And I mean, generally speaking, yes, fandoms can be the worst.
Not can be. Don't say they can be. Let's just say what's true. They always are.
But not necessarily.
Basically always.
I mean, look, the people at this event behaved. They were excited, but they weren't like de trop about it.
I trust your judgment on that. But I also know that I'm right.
I'd be the first to tell you if they'd been irritating.
I have a surprise for you.
Do you?
Yeah.
I love surprises.
It's Monday afternoon, Monday, April 1st, yes. 2024.
Yes.
I have a surprise for you. It is not an April Fool's surprise.
Thank heavens. And
I don't do those anyway.
I'll tell you, the internet gets a bad rap for a lot and deserves it.
Yeah, okay, sure.
But the internet killed April Fool's Day.
What do you mean?
I think people went so bananas for a while there with like doing these sort of fake news items or product launches or blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And it annoyed everybody. And it was finally like, all right, we're not doing this
anymore.
Can
we just stop?
Yeah. Right. So I think the internet killed April Fool's Day. And I'm fine with that.
It's a dumb thing, but it's a harmless dumb thing. I mean, unless you
harm someone.
Injure someone. You know, but like, it's harmless. I don't get worked up about it. I don't do it. I just don't hate it. I don't have the energy to hate it.
Fine.
All of my energy is devoted to getting my ass up and to the pool.
That's right.
God, Monday morning at the pool.
Cold Monday morning.
You don't want to go.
I don't know how. I couldn't do it. 6 o'clock in the morning.
It's not about can or can't. I just I have no choice. I have to do this.
You have a choice.
No.
You do it anyway.
No,
that's the impressive
part. No. There's no choice. Okay, yes, you're right. I have a choice. I can not participate in the program of rebuilding my body after surgery.
Right.
Or I can, like, languish and be in constant pain for the rest of my life.
Right.
Yeah. So you're right. I do have a choice.
But you've chosen well. And
one
good for you.
Hideous.
You've taken
task.
The hard, the immediate hard path for the eventual reward.
Yeah.
Which is always a tough sell for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, tell me about my surprise. I want to know about my surprise.
Well, remember a month ago when I made your favorite bolognese?
I do.
It's for dinner tonight.
Yay.
I put the leftovers from last time in the freezer.
Hooray.
And then we forgot they were there. That's the best part
about it.
It's
like finding a $20 bill in
your pocket. That's the best part about the freezer. You put stuff in. And after you make it, because you made too much, because I always make too much,
Like, what? I mean,
I make too much because I want the leftovers a month later.
Sure, of course.
When I make the effort, when I'm hungry for the thing.
Yeah.
And it's and then boom, you got your stuff. You thought you were getting beef stew for a third night in a row, didn't you?
I hadn't really thought about it.
No, see.
Did you freeze it?
No, we're gonna have that for lunch
tomorrow. Oh, okay.
I made such a good beef stew.
You did.
On Saturday. You guys, Ina Garten has a cookbook called Modern Comfort Food. I'm giving you a little tip here. First of all, Ina Garten is the best. You follow her on Instagram and she's far looser and more fun than Martha.
Yeah.
On Instagram. And Ina doesn't even hang out with Snoop. Like,
she's a retired nuclear scientist. She's seen stuff.
So she has a cookbook called Modern Comfort Food. And there's a beef stew recipe in there that is, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It's fancy. I unfancy it in one way and keep it fancy in another way.
Jeffrey likes it fancy.
I know. Well, they're rich. They're rich. So, you know, they can afford to go.
She can buy all the scallops and truffle butter
right,
she wants.
Right, yes. Right. I just use regular, stew chuck meat.
Oh, what does she want?
Oh, she goes Veal? To the butcher. She goes to the butcher and gets short ribs, chopped up. You know, it's like, yeah, okay. Which is fine. That costs sort of more, but it's also more work because that stuff's just not there waiting for you at the grocery store. You have to go to the butcher shop and have them do the thing for you.
Actually, Gelson's has short ribs in the beef section. I saw them when I was looking for
boneless chopped up for stew.
Oh, no, they're on the bone.
Oh, okay. Well, are they already cooked?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. This is again.
But again, it's next to the stew meat and the.
You go to your butcher in the Hamptons.
And the stroganoff meat. I didn't know this was a thing. These thin strips of beef for stroganoff.
Okay.
Which I like anything that you serve on egg noodles.
Anyway,
so, you know,
there's cognac in this.
Yes.
So like the first time I made it several years ago, I was like, oh dang, I have to buy a bottle of cognac. And the smallest bottle of cognac I could get was like, I don't even remember. I was like, this is a stupid amount of money to spend on a bottle of something I will only ever use
in this recipe.
In recipes. And have only ever used it in recipes.
We could light some fruit on fire.
I suppose. Could make a flambé of something, I guess.
Cherry's Jubilee, in the Holdovers.
Yeah. But, man, it's good.
It's a good to be.
It's real good. I made it Saturday. It was pouring rain. And we were watching Tammy and the Bachelor. Again, another tip for you. You ever watch Tammy and the Bachelor? Your mind will be scrambled by the time you're finished with it.
I was half watching Tammy and the Bachelor.
Oh, no.
I still can't believe what I saw.
I paid my full attention to Tammy and the Bachelor.
Oh, man.
I've still been thinking about it. And that song. That song is lodged in my brain.
It's an earworm.
It's a demonic earworm. So anyway, made it on Saturday. We had it on Saturday, but you know, first day beef stew is never
as awesome.
It's good, right? It's fine. It's good the way it is right when you're done making it. But it's got to cool down, go into your fridge for the next 24 hours, and then have it again. Or if you can wait, have it for the first time the next day. Kind of like a pot roast.
Yeah.
And, boy, that next day, that meat just falls apart. And that's what you got to do. Anyway, that's not what we're having for dinner.
No. I was thinking, maybe I should make an oversized batch of chili and freeze some.
Yes. Why don't you do that?
I'll be happy to.
Save me the trouble of cooking one night.
Okay.
I mean, not that I act like it's trouble. It's the thing I would prefer to be doing most of the time. You ever hit the lotto? This podcast is over. I'm just...
You'll just be in the kitchen all the
time? I'll just be cooking meals. Having a good time. I mean, this is also a good time.
I was going to say.
This podcast of the cinema. Currently a podcast about beef stew and pot roast and bolognese and chili.
But we are talking about...
Tammy and the Bachelor. Tammy, so many, I guess it's also cinema.
It is cinema. We have so many newer movies than Tammy and the Bachelor to talk about today.
We have some films that are just barely younger than Tammy and the Bachelor to talk about today. Because we've been gone for a while.
Yeah.
You.
March was crazy.
March was. You began with COVID.
Madness, some might say.
And you wound up recording an audiobook.
Yes.
You spent... How many days? 6 entire days.
Yep.
Recording your audiobook for the new book that is coming out in May called Hollywood Pride from Turner correct. Classic Movies at Running Press.
May 14th.
Pre-order it.
Pre-order now.
You can also pre-order the audio.
You can pre-order the audiobook from Audible or wherever you get those. You can pre-order the e-book.
Numerous stars were clamoring to read this audiobook.
Oh, yes.
The Matt Bomers,
the Richard Chamberlains, who as of yesterday is 90 years young. No, nobody.
The Connie Stevenses.
If they could have.
Not a part of the LGBTQ community, however.
No, but an ally. An ally, sure.
Yeah.
They could have gotten Carrot Top. No, if anybody else had wanted to read this book, they would have snapped them up. It was like, well, I guess it'll be read by the author.
You were a good budget choice, I think. They would have had to pay a famous person to do it.
Well, they paid me some.
I mean, they did pay you.
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yes. I made scale. But I'm very excited. So this is my third and a half book, and I've never done an audiobook before. So
it was very nice to watch you leave the house each morning. With your little bag of items, box of tea, your Harney and Sons cinnamon tea.
I'll tell you
that Greek honey that you stole from me.
But you know what really got me through it?
Apple cider vinegar.
Blech. I know it's nasty, but boy, you gargle with that stuff.
No,
you gargle with that stuff, and your throat is golden anew.
No, it's just.
Ugh. I know, but and then
it's
your
good
mouth
in a recipe like the cognac.
Your mouth there. Smells like Easter eggs, but I'm worth it. Pro tip:
We have some films. In fact, we have a lot of films.
We do.
We have actually a dozen movies to discuss. We're not going to get to all of them.
Lightning round, go!
We are not going to get to all of them, but we're going to get to as many of them as we can.
Okay.
In the allotted time that we have given ourselves this afternoon, not counting all the chit-chat about beef stew that we just, some would say wasted your time with, but not me. I would never say that because it's not true. Because we're doing you a solid with this podcast by telling you all about the current cinema. Would you like to know? Do you want to go back to like the oldest?
Sure, why not?
Let's start with the oldest. No, let's start with the newest.
Pick one.
All right, Godzilla, Silent X, Kong, the New Empire. Go.
Okay, this is the latest of the Warner Legendary, Monarch Monsterverse, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah.
And it's from the director of Godzilla vs. Kong, which I thought was not good.
All right.
And I think this one is pretty good.
Can I tell you that I don't remember anything about Godzilla vs. Kong?
I had to go look up my review to even remember it.
Yeah.
It's the one where Millie Bobby Brown and Brian Tyree Henry are running around and there's
Apex
Corporation.
Yeah.
And like the big third act surprise is that Mechagodzilla shows up.
Right.
But it didn't stick to the ribs. Now, mind you, I'm a weirdo in all this because I liked 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters. that one to me from Mike Doherty, who did Trick or Treat and Krampus, I thought, ah, finally, an American kaiju movie that is at least close to giving me the pleasure that I get out of a really good Japanese kaiju movie.
Right.
Well, that's the one that tanked. No one went to see it. Reviews were middling. So I was like, not doing that again.
Yeah.
But I'll say this one is maybe my second favorite of the American, of the this recent batch of American kaiju movies.
All right.
So basically, Godzilla has been left to live on in Hollow Earth, which is this area under the surface of the world where there's mountains and then there's other mountains upside down on top of them.
They stole that idea from a Keebler cookie commercial.
There's some dumb movie, I think, where there's like an up society and a down society, but I forget what right. it is. Anyway, and he's alone because there's no other Kongs around until a big sinkhole opens.
Yep.
And then there's a bunch of Kongs.
There's a bunch of Kongs.
Including a...
Except...
But they're all oppressed by one big mean Kong.
Trump, and there's... Trump Kong.
Trump Kong.
He's a big orange,
yes.
nasty Kong.
And there's yep. a little mini-me Kong that he gets to take under his wing. There's some mysterious signal that's emanating from somewhere, and Kong can sense it, and Godzilla can sense it, and he's running around the planet like...
The kid can sense it, too.
I'm getting to the kid.
Okay, get to the kid.
The Godzilla right. is sucking up energy from, like, nuclear power plants and other kaiju, and the kid, the survivor of Skull Island, whom Dr. Scientist Rebecca Hall has adopted, yeah. is also getting the signal. What does it all mean? Monsters want to fight. That's what right. it means. That's what right. it always means. That's what it should mean.
Yeah.
And the monster fighting in this movie is pretty good, and they give you some dollops of it along the way, so you're not just sitting around waiting for the last 20 minutes of the movie. It's pretty good.
I feel like you're damning it with faint praise.
Well, I don't want to oversell it because it's not. I don't think it's great, but it is, I think, like I said, it's one of the better of the American ones. Look, I'm still riding the high of Godzilla Minus One, which you still haven't seen.
Which I still have not seen.
Which I hope we'll get to.
Well, I just read an article that suggests that I might have to wait an even little bit longer.
Well, there's some weird deal about the American Godzilla movies have a deal where like they can't release a Japanese Godzilla movie too close to it.
There's a contractual, apparently, yeah. based on what I've read, there's a contractual thing going on where Godzilla Minus One had to be out of theaters, even though it was still doing really well with the American...
And had an Oscar nomination.
The American box office and then an Academy Award win. That movie, according to what I read... had to be out of theaters contractually before Godzilla X Kong could open.
Right.
And it might not be available to stream or on physical media for several more months.
Well.
And it came out, it came to theaters in December of 2023 when there was no possible way for me to get to a movie theater.
If this continues, in May, we're getting the Japanese Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have an all-region.
And we have an all-region play.
That's good. So if there are English subtitles, we'll be fine.
I would imagine there would be. I will invest in that. And because I really, really, really want you to see it. Because it's a great movie. It's a great, right. it's like one of the great kaiju movies of all time.
Yeah.
It was on my top 10 list. Like, yeah. It was in my top 5 last year. And so this movie is like, well, that's cute. Where Americans still think they can do this. And they're doing it better than they often have, certainly better than the last time out with this same director, Adam Wingard. So maybe I'm soft selling it. I don't want to oversell it. You are clearly more into it than I am, I guess.
I was physically unable to get the Godzilla Minus One. I had just had the first of two hip surgeries. But I'm really, I was really pleasantly surprised by this one.
Mm-hmm.
I worry so often when I go into any big dumb American movie at this point in my life. And this had the same sense of colorful fun that my favorite era of Godzilla films had, mid-60s to mid-70s. Hedorah, Jet Jaguar.
Destroy All Monsters.
Megalon, Destroy All Monsters.
Son of.
Mecha. You know, that's my, I imprinted on those films.
Sure.
Because those were the films that those I saw when I was.
Cornerstones of Dave White's cinematic practice.
When I was a child, I would go see them on the Saturday kid matinees.
Right.
So I had the wonderful experience of seeing all of these movies in movie theaters. And I went back again and again. Every time they came around, I was there. In between those films, I would watch wrestling on TV with my grandfather because he lived with us. And not the same, but similar.
Sure.
Because those early kaiju films were all human beings in rubber costumes wrestling with each other on, you know, sets made of miniatures. Last week, we were on KCRW, the local NPR station. We were talking about this movie, and I just went on about how, you know, I've accepted the march of time. You can complain about it all you want, but it's never coming back. History is done. It is not returning. Everything's a cartoon made on a computer now. That's just that. You can accept it. You can stomp your feet and go home.
Crush Tokyo.
Yeah. I super enjoyed this. As I said, it's got the goofy, colorful sense of silliness.
Yeah.
That I
hot pink Godzilla.
I miss. Yeah. Godzilla, by energizing himself with the radiation from other kaiju and from nuclear reactors and stuff like that, now has a giant glowing pink spine. And as I said on the radio, it's not June yet, but that is gay pride. And you can argue with me all you want.
Stomp, girl.
Yes. You can argue with me all you want, but I'm right. You know why? Because that is how I'm reading the film.
Exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, Godzilla is a lady from, as we know from the... From the 98 version.
That is not canon.
Oh, okay.
The 1998 version is not canon, but Pink Spine Godzilla is now canon.
Yes. Have you seen the Pink Spine billboard?
No, you were telling me about it.
It's a doozy.
We have them in Los Angeles.
Like, it lights up. It's amazing.
Yeah. In addition to Godzilla's Pink Spine, let's just keep on going with the queer energy being served. Here, there are other elements in this movie that are doing it in a very similar way. The queen, is she the queen of Hollow Earth? The woman who comes out from backstage somewhere.
I guess she's the other sort of lost people that the girl from Skull Island comes from.
Her entrance reminded me of the sparkly space ladies in Destroy All Monsters. Because she comes out and she's shimmering. She is like serving a look.
Right.
And when she comes out, I was like, oh, hi, who are you? What are you doing here? What's your function in the story? I like you already. This is a very good outfit that you have on.
Then there's every other thing Brian Tyree Henry says in this movie.
I don't know where his character has been built, whether it is in the screenwriting process or in the let's just let Brian Tyree Henry say what he wants process. I'm in my heart, I'm hoping for a little of both. But he pops in to this movie, and every time, first of all, he's always the comic relief.
Yes, because he's a podcaster, and those guys are always idiots.
A podcaster is a joke. We all know this.
Always.
Right? Okay. So Brian Tyree Henry shows up and immediately begins complimenting scientist Rebecca Hall on her new haircut, the new highlights in her hair. And she just looks at him like, why are you telling me you like my highlights? You know, like,
well, the moment is, I think, intended to make it look like flirtation gone wrong because it's awkward, but he's talking about highlights.
He's talking about highlights. Dan Stevens comes along. Dan Stevens from many films, but originally from Downton Abbey.
Right.
He's the very bro-y, dude-y,
veterinarian,
but like, but kaiju veterinarian.
Yeah. And dentist. And Kong dentist.
Yeah.
And I can't decide if he is insufferable in this or he's just playing an insufferable character really well.
He's playing the Matthew McConaughey character that you wish Matthew McConaughey would just keep doing. Rather than whatever character he's prepping for right now, the one he showed up for on the Oscars looking like a human, like French fry.
Right. Oh, yeah. There is a lot of all right about this guy. Yeah. Or as I said in my review on the Film Verdict, he doesn't make finger guns in this movie, but he's a totally finger guns kind of person.
Right. So every time Brian Tyree Henry is scared of something, he grabs Dan Stevens by the arm for comfort, like resting his head on his shoulder. At the end of the movie, here are some spoilers. They don't matter. They're selling points. Dan Stevens comes along. He's going to rescue everybody. And Brian Tyree Henry yells, "I will kiss you on the mouth." And I thought, all right, then do it.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Let's see that movie.
Yeah. So there is, well, there's that. In addition to it, there's so much sparkly, crystal, psychedelic production design.
Yeah.
It's like watching some old Raquel Welch special from 1972.
They got the crystal blue persuasion going on here.
someone has designed a film to be read this way.
Mm.
None of these things, when you pile them up this high,
like
when you throw out one or two, you are saying, oh, isn't this silly? Isn't this goofy? But when you give the audience like a dozen different things to go, hey, I'm an LGBTQ. Is this movie for me? The answer is, I think, yes. And then finally, there's a cameo. I'm not going to spoil the cameo.
No.
All right. Well, there's a cameo. And it's not even a cameo, really. It is a third act.
It's a reveal.
It is a third act reveal. Runway legend. Tens across the board. Yeah. When this character showed up.
Yes, mama.
Yes. When this character showed up, I went, oh! Because, first of all, I love this character, but they look so good here. Worth it just for that.
Yeah.
The whole run, it's a 2-hour movie. Like, it's 30 minutes too long.
Yeah.
But, honestly, like, I would love to go back to the theater just to have that moment again.
I think, you know what?
That entrance?
I almost feel like now I would see this again knowing that I wasn't sitting there with my reviewer hat on.
Right.
Maybe have, like,
right,
you know, go see what Godzilla, like, tie-in cocktails are serving at MacGuffin's.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
MacGuffin's is the name of the bar in the AMC Grove.
No, in all of the AMCs.
Oh, it's in all the AMCs?
Well, every AMC that has a bar,
every
it is
AMC
called
that
MacGuffin's.
Has a bar, yeah.
Burbank has one. They're all over.
Anyway, also Rebecca Hall is in this movie. And she's the scientist, and she's the one who just yells exposition at you. But every time she yells the exposition, you're like, sure.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense, but you're telling me it's science, and that means it's true.
I'm thinking of, like, you know, watching her is like watching John Cassavetes in a dumb movie where you're thinking he is saving up to shoot another 2 weeks of shadows.
Woman under the influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get paid, Rebecca Hall, and make another movie, because Passing was really good.
The bad Orange Kong gets to ride an ice lizard. Like a skateboard.
Yes. Although, again.
Although what?
Well, okay. The
There's no although.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Orange Kong controls the ice lizard with this blade that's hanging from the end of like a spinal cord that he whips around.
Sure.
And he cuts Kong with it. What is it?
Who cares?
What is this blade that can do everything and control everyone? I need one line from Rebecca Hall to explain it to me. That's all I ask.
I substituted myself for you last week on Breakfast All Day.
Yes, you did.
To discuss this film with Christy Lemire. And I did throw this out, but I know that the audiences don't always listen or watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to remind, I'm gonna drop this one again in this review. Punch, punch, punch.
Ah, yes.
And I'm just going to leave you with that. If you know, you know.
Keep your eye peeled.
Keep your eyes peeled. Blink and you miss. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you'll miss it and you won't care.
Yeah.
But if you do know what I'm talking about, it's for you.
It's a little special little moment.
Special little moment for the real ones out here. All right? That's what I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the kind of fan service I like. The kind that is on screen.
The kind that's for me.
And the kind that's on screen for less than 2 seconds.
All right, let's move on.
Yes.
Hundreds of beavers.
Hundreds of beavers.
Please discuss what even is this.
Okay. This is a black and white silent comedy, essentially, with music.
How about we call it dialogue-free?
Right.
It's got plenty of sound.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of silent movies, you know, are generally have some kind of at least music involved. But yes,
okay.
It is a wordless comedy.
Right.
With occasional intertitles. From a guy named Mike Cheslick. He's a filmmaker who previously did a low-budget film called Lake Michigan Monster. He co-wrote it with the film's star, one Ryland Brixen Cole Twos.
Okay.
And it is about a guy with an apple orchard who makes applejack, but then one day the orchard is ruined by a bunch of beavers and he sets out to trap a bunch of them.
Yes.
And that's kind of the plot. And so he, you know, sets out after a bunch of beavers who are played by human beings in like beaver mascot costumes.
Now, as we just discussed with Godzilla. Were you jonesing for adult human beings
in suits,
in animal costumes of some sort or other to be in a movie? Well, this is where you get dozens of them, if not perhaps hundreds.
Probably dozens and then camera trickery, but, you know, whatever. This movie wears its relatively low budget on its sleeve, but it is endlessly inventive.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard about this movie and it was making the rounds at festivals and people were digging it. And I thought.
And it was going to small theaters around the country, one city at a time.
Yeah.
Like Memoria thought that's what the movie was going to do.
Exactly.
But they had money behind them. This one.
Yeah. This was very, you know.
This reminds me of back in the day when our dear late friend Sarah Jacobson would get in her actual car
and schlep and drive Mary Jane's Not a Virgin
drive the print from town to town. Continue.
Everything I read about this movie, I thought, and I think I maybe even saw the trailer, I thought, okay, very stylish, fun idea.
Yeah.
40 minutes max, and then it's going to be like, nope, not funny anymore.
After about 10 minutes, I thought, how much longer is this going to be?
Yeah, there's like, you think there's no way they're going to maintain this over the 108-minute running time. Listeners, they do.
It
is hysterically funny from start to finish.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Yeah.
I was reminded of Guy Madden. I was reminded of Chuck Jones. I was reminded of all kinds of things, but I was also
The Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Tom and Jerry. Like every old cartoon that you ever watched as a child in any way that you watched it, where the predator and the prey
are adversaries.
Are adversaries and constantly trying to annihilate the other one.
Yeah. And the predator keeps falling off of things.
Things that would kill a normal
entity.
Never kills anyone. But it is endlessly energetic.
Yeah.
The momentum never lags. The silliness never outstays its welcome.
The setups and payoffs
are all wonderful and dumb and
brilliant.
Visually gorgeous to look at, in the way that you mentioned Guy Madden, in the way that an early black and white Guy Madden film would be, where you think, you made all of this out of cardboard.
Yeah.
And
you set out to make a movie that looks like it was made in 1914.
Yeah. Everything about it looks so cool the way an old Guy Madden movie would look. I really loved this.
Me too.
And would just turn around and watch it again right now. Would love to see it projected on a screen. We were sent a screening.
I would say it's on my list of one I'd want to see it projected, and I want to see it with a packed audience.
But this is, I believe, the kind of movie that, even though it's about to begin streaming, I think next week,
April 15th, it will be streaming on like Prime Video and Apple TV, and then going to Fandor on the 19th.
I have a feeling, at least in larger cities like here, we're going to get the chance to catch it on a
screen.
It'll
still be
again.
Knocking around.
Yeah. Yeah, because one by one, people I know have seen this film, and they're like, have you seen this movie? I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, I had to watch it on TV at home, but it's definitely, it is a delight.
It has the kind of word of mouth potential of something like RRR.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is that much just adrenaline fun. And you're just watching this guy wrestle and try to trap and murder other people as big as he is in beaver costumes. And fail. Repeatedly fail again and again and again. It is
a Rube Goldberg device of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have anything else to say about it other than like
yeah, exactly. I know. I can't parse this movie. I just know that everything it's doing is working for me.
Yeah.
And I was thoroughly delighted, and again, I love a surprise. I did not see this coming as being as wonderful as it is.
Yeah. There's a who made the Dudley Do-Right cartoons, and
oh, Jay Ward.
Jay Ward. There's a Jay Ward quality going on in a lot of the
maps with dotted lines.
The idiocy of everything that's taking place here. I cannot recommend this highly enough. It's the best dumb movie that you will see all year. That's what I'm saying right now.
And it's the kind of dumb that only works because the people make it have a real understanding of the craft.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart people, you can only make something funny that's dumb if you're smart.
Yeah.
And they know exactly
what they're doing and how to do it.
Yeah. Now, we also... Let's shift gears in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Io Capitano.
Okay.
All right.
Academy Award nominated Best International Film.
From Matteo Garrone. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say his last name? Okay. It was nominated for Best International Film. It did not win.
No.
It is still kicking around art houses. But again, it is about to start streaming
next week,
within the coming week. So by the time you listen to this, you will have had a chance to you will have a chance to stream it. It stars a young man named Seydou Sarr as a character named Seydou. Another teenage actor, Mustafa Fall, plays Seydou's cousin Musa. So they're variations on their name. They are from Senegal, and they have a life in Senegal that is very family bonded. They're part of the community there, but they know there's no future.
Opportunity.
And they feel desperate to get out and to go to Italy by any means necessary so that they can finally earn a living that will help them support their families back in Senegal. This is the story of, you know, millions and millions of people who migrate from country to country in search of a better life. So they set out to go to Italy, and they pay some very bad people to transport them. And the very bad people do this, and they begin a harrowing journey of physical, you know,
hardship,
torture, exploitation, abuse. At one point, they are made slaves to build stuff on a rich person's estate. So the script is based on real stories from migrants and refugees who've traveled from African countries to Europe about the brutality that they face on that path. And this movie, in spite of its occasional detours into dreamlike fantasy sequences,
magical realism,
which in spite of that, it is at times a fairly difficult watch.
Yeah.
And that's even with the knowledge that most of these horrific details come from firsthand accounts. And some of the most horrific details were not even included here. I read an interview later where they were like, yeah, if we included everything some of the people that we talked to told us, it would be too punishing,
right,
to watch. But he wanted to make sure, Matteo Garrone, wanted to make sure that it didn't go unseen.
Yeah.
So I will admit this is a beautiful film about the ugly things that people do to people.
Yeah.
And that's always a tough balance in terms of like viewership. But I also know that it's incredibly relevant right now, you know. In the United States alone, we have currently got, you know, another fake border crisis ginned up.
Right. It's an election year?
For the sake of votes during an election year. And in the process, reasonable people are losing their humanity and becoming a very tired, very typical old thing that has been a part of the United States since forever. Anti-immigrant idiots.
Yeah.
And so that means this movie is relevant, not just to the U.S., but to, like, any other
Western, you know, Europe.
Western country that people from poorer countries, particularly countries in the southern part of the globe, look at and see and think, it's got to be better than here.
Yeah.
I'll just take my chances. So in that, it joins other films about migration. And there's a lot of them in cinema history. I think as a person who is in the audience, you have the decision. You know, you can hear these stories or you can ignore them from people who have no choice but to leave, and leave where they live, and often no other place to go, no place that will take them, right? You've got countries that will absolutely shut you out, which is what our government keeps trying to do right now.
Yeah.
Including people who are seeking asylum, not just economic opportunity, but asylum from political and you know, physical persecution in their own countries.
Well, and people who are fleeing, you know, war zones that we are funding and creating.
Right. Yes, yes. So I think, I'm not saying that if you won't watch this, you're a bad person, but films like this remind those of us who have relative stability and the privilege of living in places that are not war zones,
right,
and not, you know, desperately impoverished. If you are unwilling to look at the reality of what's going on in the world, then think about how you call yourself a decent person.
I think what stories like this do that's valuable is that they put a face on a thing. It's one thing to show like a big crowd of people outside of a gate or something, right, and talking about, oh, the refugee crisis.
Right.
But if you have, if you get to know, you know, these two characters, if you know why Seydou and Masa are making this journey and what they've endured to get to where they get,
right,
then that changes your perspective. That all of those people outside that gate have names and have stories and have reasons for being here. And, you know, the people who want to keep them a faceless mass so they can treat them as a political, you know, scare thing or football or whatever,
right,
you know, don't want you to perceive them as fellow human beings.
Yeah. Gosh, when this was still pre-Academy Awards and it was in a lot of more, it was in a lot more theaters than it is now, we talked about it on the radio on KCRW, and I said, what's the difference? And this is not, I didn't make this up. Someone, I read it somewhere and it stuck with me. What's the difference between you and a refugee? Luck.
Yeah.
And you were talking about, well, are they refugees? And I was like, yeah, no, they are. They are. These two characters are refugees. They need something better than what they've got.
Right.
They need to escape where they are and have a life that they can be, you know, happy with, and that will help them deal with their families. So I think even... We like to parse these things out. We like to we like to make distinctions, I think, between, well, you just want to come here and make money. Well, yeah. Yeah, because people, you know what people want to do with money? Eat and have a place to live.
I wasn't necessarily questioning the idea of them being refugees.
No, I know you were.
But I think that But
you brought up the word.
Right.
And the how it's defined, and I thought it was an important thing
sure.
for us to discuss.
And yeah, I mean, the way the film is structured, it's not like, you know, they have to run or they're going to become, you know, drafted into the army or something like that.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. It's still a totally valid thing. Like, I want to be able to provide for my family. I want to go where the opportunity is.
Right.
The opportunity is elsewhere.
Yes. And there are European countries that are like, nope.
Oh, yeah.
But Italy apparently isn't one of them. Italy is like, yep, come on.
Yeah.
And so, or if they're not, yeah, come on.
They're at least
a they're little- at least...
relatively, you know, more yeah. welcoming, you know.
That's my understanding. Julia?
I was going to say, Julia?
What do you know
wrong?
About this?
Tell us.
Also, Julia, we know you're listening. we ask Julia to be the representative of all people in Italy
yes.
as a listener. Because the next film we're going to talk about is Italian as well, La Chimera.
Yes.
And we went round and round on the pronunciation of that word.
Because I swear they say chimera in the movie.
And they might. I didn't remember them saying it that way in the film. But I looked up source after source on how to pronounce this word on the internet, and every single pronunciation source said chimera.
Yeah.
So let's just split the difference, shall we? We'll just pick one. We're going to pick La Chimera.
Yes.
It's from Alice Rohrwacher, who made the wonderful film from a few years ago called Happy as Lazaro.
Yes.
That we both loved and is still on Netflix.
Yes.
It went...
It was a Netflix movie.
It came out during the pandemic and it went right to Netflix when, had it not been a global virus going around, it would have been in theaters.
But it was Netflix did actually.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But it still would have wound up in theater.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, it's on Netflix. Go watch that one because it's
so good.
Truly great. This is her new one. And it stars Josh O'Connor, who you may know from the queer indie film
God's Own Country.
God's Own Country. He was in Emma. He's been in a lot of stuff. And he's one of those young British actors who's face and physicality sort of hides in whatever film he's in.
Yeah, you don't
recognize. Because you had seen him in like five things, yeah. And you were like, who's this guy again?
You don't, and that's great. Like, I admire that kind of chameleon that can disappear from movie to movie. For a long time, Justin Theroux, I never could recognize from thing to thing.
And he's handsome.
He is handsome.
So is Josh O'Connor. So the, it is a film about a young man who is an archaeologist, but he's
a grave robber.
He is currently a grave robber because he has a special gift. He can sense where the Etruscan antiquities are hiding.
Where the tombs are.
Underground, yeah. And he falls in with a variety of grave robbing gangs. At one point, at the very beginning of the film, he is on his way back to Italy, having served time in prison for doing just this. And he took the fall for the rest of everybody. He gets back and they're like, let's go out on a job again. And he's like, no, I would like to rest. but they get him right back into the fold and they begin, you know, finding old tombs and taking the treasures for selling them on the black market. Meanwhile, he is remembering a woman named Beniamina. And in Italy, Arthur is visiting Isabella Rossellini, who is either Beniamina's mother or grandmother. There are lots of women in the house, all of them approximately the same generation, younger, the daughters and or granddaughters of Isabella Rossellini. You were a little unclear, you said, as to how they were all related, if in fact they were the daughters, but I think the film made it pretty clear that they were all family.
I think given that there's so many of them that are so seemingly close in age, I at some point was like,
I was thinking they're all sisters and the daughters of the sisters.
I don't know if they were all former, like, you know, music students who got pressed into being housemaids. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on here.
There is a music student who has been also pressed into being a housemaid. Her name is Italia, which is another symbolic name. Because he begins to maybe kind of sort of fall for Italia, all the while nursing this old memory of Beniamina. It becomes clear over time that Beniamina isn't going to come back. We still don't know why she's not going to come back, but she's not coming back. But he longs for her, and he longs for the ability to reach out to her, whether that is something that is only going to happen in his dreams, or if he is going to travel back to the grave to finally reunite with her. And this is where the sort of magical realist elements of this film come into play. What I love about this movie is that you never quite know what it's about until it unfolds and blooms in front of you. And it takes its time doing that, and it leads you down some unusual paths to get there. But I think over the course of the running time, you learn that Arthur doesn't really care about the things he's doing. He doesn't care about making money on the black market.
No, he respects the object more than he cares about the profit. And at one point, I think it's Italia says, you know, these were not made for human eyes to see. This is art intended for souls to enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's kind of on that page with her.
He has a gift that no one else understands. They just want to use him for it.
Right.
And I think that this entire enterprise that they're involved in, these grave robbers, sort of represents the ways that modern people, and we see this in the third act of the film when museum curators come along to an auction
right.
and try to get their hands on this stuff. I think it represents the modern the ways that modern people, contemporary people, like
commodify,
exploit and destroy everything beautiful so that they can make money, rather than what he would like to do, which is sort of preserve it, care for it, and love beauty for its own sake. But he has a particular affinity for the things that people have left behind or tried to carry with them into the afterlife, whatever that might mean. He's trying to learn a mystery. And his ultimate dilemma, I think, is one where he has to stay a part of life above ground.
Even though he's looking for that door that you know, separates the two worlds.
Yeah.
We pause because right after I talked about the door that separates the two worlds, the wind blew our door open. I'm not going to read anything into that. It's just weird.
This is a magical realist apartment.
Clearly.
Yeah. Rent-controlled magical realist apartment.
it's hard enough to find one or the other, but yeah. Both, forget it. Yeah.
I want to talk about Josh O'Connor for a second and how great he is in this film. I said this to the radio the other way. It's like his performance is like something from a silent film.
Yeah.
Mostly because he doesn't have a lot of dialogue. Like, he reacts more than he acts.
He and the character are both very Italian as a second language.
Yeah. And so much of his performance is the result of physical face. Gesture and his face, and his increasing grubbiness, as though he just wants to live under the ground. And it becomes, you know, I keep talking about that, but it becomes very, very real. Like, yeah. This is a film about, you know, the struggle between life and death and the pull of those places. And which one would you like to be a part of? And I just, the more I see of Alicia Rohrabacher's films, the more I love them. I think she just has this special quality. She can lead you into these very wonderful, mysterious places. And I always want to go wherever she's going.
If you haven't seen her short La Pupille, it's on Disney Plus.
It's on Disney Plus, yeah.
Yeah, and it's about cake.
Yeah, pretty much. It is about cake. Well, 2024 showed up, and
it's 1/4 over, Dave.
Yes, it is. And an R-rated romantic comedy hit theaters that neither one of us had a moment to even go out and look at.
Was it 2024? Or was it like over Christmas?
No, it opened this year.
This year, okay.
Yeah, and. That's my memory. Do we want to pause the recording and find out the facts about this? Or do you just want to check your phone while I'm talking?
Oh, I'll do that.
The film is called Anyone But You, and it is now finally available on streaming and physical media. It stars everyone's favorite lightning rod, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, this came out in December of 2023.
Did it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was I remember this being like...
Well... It felt like January to me.
Well, yeah.
In any case. And it also stars, what's the guy's
Glenn
name?
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell.
Star of the next Richard Linklater movie, which I saw at Venice.
So they're both blonde. And they meet and they get it on.
They don't.
Don't they?
They spend the night together, but nothing happens.
Oh, that seems impossible. But
they're drunk and they sort of cuddle on the sofa and then she leaves.
I could have sworn they did it.
No.
They did.
It's part of the plot.
It. All right. I was paying attention to about 85% of this movie where blonde hot people are as nearly naked as they can possibly be most of the time.
Yes.
In a rom-com about how they hate each other.
Right.
After they spend that one night together, a series of quick misunderstandings leads them down the path of angry, vicious banter.
Right.
until they wind up in Australia for a family wedding, and they have to both be there because, coincidentally, they are both part of the wedding party.
Her
sister
is marrying his best friend, I think.
Something like that.
Wait, it's a lesbian wedding. Her sister
is marrying
is marrying his best friend's sister.
But did you forget that it was a lesbian wedding?
It just popped back into my head. It's been a few weeks. Plot-wise, this is basically Much Ado About Nothing, which they...
Oh, and they drop...
And they periodically...
Shakespeare-y bits in here and there, yeah. Anytime there's a piece of dialogue that feels too good for the movie, you think, oh, that's the Shakespeare part.
Billy S. wrote that one. And there's little intertitles, not even... Yes. They're not titles, per se, but they're, like, written on things.
Yeah, that, yeah. It's absolutely...
Acknowledging the source
material. A Shakespeare adaptation. It's just not all that funny until, well, let me say it differently. It's just not all that funny when they stop fighting.
It does kind of sink it a bit, but
it's funny when they're fighting. They're good at fighting.
They are.
They're good at fighting and being hot and being blonde and being not wearing many clothes. That is what the film is about. And when they stop fighting, you stop caring.
But I will say the romance is not bad. Like there are some big sort of sweeping moments where they, you know,
it actually ends with him saying something like, "I love when you blah blah blah, and I love when you blah blah blah." Like every Harry and Sally movie that has come along since Harry and Sally.
But the fact that they like the big romantic like reveal to each other takes place while they're both clinging to a dinghy in the Sydney Harbor.
Sure,
it's kind of fun.
That's. Sure, it's fine.
It is the kind of movie where... You watch on an airplane, or if you live somewhere really cold and, like, the snow is piled up outside your house and you want to watch beautiful people in swimwear enjoying a tropical paradise, I'll tell you, it was better than that most recent George Clooney, Julia Roberts movie.
Absolutely.
And it was better than the... J-Lo wedding with the terrorists movie.
Which one was that?
The one with where it's like she's getting married in some like tropical resort and then like people get kidnapped and stuff.
Did I see that one?
Maybe not. It was on Amazon Prime. I've seen this one's. I can see
you are a veteran of the bad Hallmark rom-com.
Also that.
And I think your standards are on the floor when it comes to this.
I'm not saying that this movie is great.
Didn't say you were saying it was great. I said that you're giving it more of a pass than it deserves.
You know, fine. I was tougher on Godzilla Kong, so yeah.
I appreciate the necessity of the moment.
Yeah.
And the necessity of the moment is very hot people who are willing to take off most of their clothing.
Right.
And say R-rated things to each other.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be where rom-coms live in the cinema these days.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to cable. Otherwise, they're going to streaming. Otherwise, they're going to Hallmark. Yeah. And they're going to get neutered and softened down and turned into mushy nothing.
Melted margarine.
So I'll give this one the points for being less, not mushy nothing.
Right.
It is a reasonably fine Shakespeare comedy adaptation that is sometimes funny.
I am happy when an R-rated rom-com finds an audience and makes money because it means they will make more of them.
I understand that too. And that's,
next one will be better than this.
Maybe. Maybe not. I like them.
Yes, they're very appealing.
They are the reason, if you're going to watch it, they're the reason because they both have that thing.
Yeah.
That makes them shoot light out of their bodies onto the camera. Like, you see them and you think, too beautiful. He's too beautiful. She's too beautiful. Go away. I can't look at you.
You should look at them through a piece of cardboard with a pinhole in it. Yeah. You know? Also, you know, I like when you have a nice supporting bench of veterans. This movie gives you Brian Brown and Rachel Griffiths and Dermot Mulroney. You know, I'm down for all this.
Rachel Griffiths being American
in an in a movie set in Australia.
Does she have an Australian accent anymore?
Did she completely forget it? I don't know. I haven't really seen her in anything since.
It's how you like when you hear Sheena Easton talk these days. You're like, what country are you from now? Nevada?
Oh, did she lose the burr?
It's gone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bummer.
At least the last time I heard her talk, it was gone.
Okay.
Maybe she pulls it out for parties or whatever, but...
Now she's with the Las Vegas Chamber of Commerce.
Right. Yes, exactly. So, like, I feel like I've been too harsh on this dumb movie that doesn't ask for anything but your willingness to watch pretty people almost have sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that front, it is a triumph.
It is a miniature triumph. The triumph of small things.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Roadhouse before we bail out of here.
Whew. Boy.
The great late 80s film Roadhouse, starring Patrick Swayze. Listen, if ever there was an agree to disagree moment in this relationship, it's...
Beautrevi and Roadhouse.
It's Beautrevi and Roadhouse. Beautrevi is a masterpiece. The OG Roadhouse is a different sort of masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
A masterpiece of stupid. And it is a film that I love and that I have seen many times and will always sit down to watch. Because when you watch the original Roadhouse, you see something new. You see something new that was stupid that's been there the whole time and you missed it because you were paying attention to the stupid thing that was happening in the left-hand side of the frame. There is wild violence in the original Roadhouse. So crazy is the wild violence that you have to stop it and look at it again and go, that still doesn't make any sense. Therefore, it is a source of pleasure that you can return to over and over and over again. And now they've remade it with Jake Gyllenhaal. And this was
Doug Liman.
Doug Liman has seen the original Roadhouse. Jake Gyllenhaal has seen the original Roadhouse. Every person in the cast has seen the original Roadhouse. The film as an entity also lives in a world where the original Roadhouse exists. This is a movie that knows itself because it is a clone of an older thing.
Is it like how in the Footloose remake at the beginning of the movie, their teens die listening to Footloose?
To the song Footloose, yes. That is what this Roadhouse is. It is a Roadhouse that exists in a world where the movie Roadhouse already is.
It seems to have missed the point of... why Roadhouse is
hang on
remotely entertaining.
You have to tell people what it's about.
Okay.
Jake Gyllenhaal is a lone wolf.
Yeah.
And
does not have a philosophy degree.
Not this time anyway.
No.
He kind of acts like he does. Yeah. He shows up in a little Florida town, of course it's Florida, and he goes to a town where in the charter on Founders Day of this town, it is stipulated that by law, every person must be involved in bare-knuckle brawling. Men, women, children, it doesn't matter.
Well,
violence is the way the town functions. Everywhere you go, people are fighting or burning things down.
Like in the first movie, he is hired by the owner of the Roadhouse.
I was going to get to that. Keep going. Keep talking.
In this case, the owner of the Roadhouse is Jessica Williams, which is a nice little spin.
From The Daily Show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And movies of her own.
Other places.
Yes. It turns out that the Roadhouse is the one last bit of this... Glass Key is the name of the city.
Right.
I don't know if that's a reference to the old noir movie, The Glass Key, but, you know, if it is, well done. It's the last bit of property that Billy Magnuson can't get his hands on.
Billy Magnuson has also seen Roadhouse.
Yes.
He knows what kind of villain he wants to be here.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the original, you have Ben Gazzara, who is just sort of like a small town tin pot tyrant.
Yeah.
Billy Magnuson is like a rich kid D-bag with a yacht.
Yes.
And a walloping sense of entitlement.
Yes.
So it's not, he's not, he would never get his hands dirty and, like, you know, shake people down for protection money the way Ben Gazzara does. He's just trying to, like, outdo his dad, who is in prison for reasons.
Crimes.
And so he's the guy behind the people who are misbehaving at the Roadhouse.
Yes.
Well,
every night
they're all going to come into conflict.
Every night people are misbehaving at the Roadhouse, and every night it's
like there's a different band playing.
There's a different band playing, but there's the same destruction and mayhem. And every morning, the owner,
Jessica Williams,
says, "Oh well, we have insurance." I'm like, "Not for long, you don't." How much insurance do you have? As I'm watching this film, and again, very much like watching the original film, you think to yourself, you know, there are other towns that you could live in where the threat of annihilation is not handed to you every time you leave your front door. Like when you go to the Piggly Wiggly, for example, someone's not trying to bust your skull open at grocery stores in other towns. You could move.
Also, as a honky-tonk, you could serve drinks in plastic.
You could do that. Also, you could have better bouncers than the ones you have. Because
one of them is... What's his butt?
Yeah. Is what's his face? Connor...
No. He's the...
He's one of the bad guys.
No, he's the bad guy. No. One of the bouncers is Lucas Gage.
No, that's right. Girl.
He's no bouncer.
Girl, you ain't a bouncer.
That twink isn't going to stop a bridge club fight, let alone a Roadhouse fight. Come on.
The cartoonishness of the insane violence in both of these films is something that you must set aside, kind of like the ridiculousness of a film like Anyone But You or Hundreds of Beavers.
But I'll say this,
yes.
the original cartoonish violence is performed by legit stuntmen doing
yes.
the things.
Yes.
This movie leans very heavily into CGI
yeah.
because Post Malone and Jake Gyllenhaal, for all of their other attributes...
Oh, yeah, Post Malone is in this movie too, by the way. Yeah.
...are not... bringing it in the fist to the jaw department.
Having said that, this dumb retread is dumb, and I was entertained watching it. I probably won't watch it again the way I will watch the old Roadhouse.
I will happily never
over
watch
and over
either
again.
Roadhouse well, again ever. But I will watch this one again.
You can spend Thanksgiving somewhere else then. I
will watch this one again less than I will watch the original Roadhouse again. If that makes any sense.
Go ahead and sit down with it if you feel like it. If you're curious, and I know you're curious, because if you love Roadhouse, the first one, as you should, you're going to want to check this one
okay,
out.
Okay, well, here's the thing. The shtick of the original one
yeah.
is that Patrick Swayze makes no sense. Like
I know.
Everybody's always talking about how he like, I thought you'd be bigger, and he's got this philosophy degree and this whole sort of Zen outlook, and he's doing Tai Chi on the yard with
yeah.
his shirt on and all that stuff.
Right, right.
And it's like, okay, this guy.
Every other moment, he's like, yes, I'm a dancer.
Yeah, this guy's a bouncer, but he brings an interesting
yeah.
backstory to it.
Right.
Jake Gyllenhaal is a former punched people for a living guy
yeah.
who is now punching people for a living again.
Right.
And it's not, as interesting. And then especially because you get this whole sort of third act where it's like, yeah, I was trying to keep myself from being like a complete sociopath, but that's not working. I'm going to get back to doing a, being a complete sociopath so that I can like save the bar from Billy Magnuson. And that's less interesting.
And I do have a question about the ending. Once, you know, the bad guys are vanquished and the good guys have, you know, won.
Swept up.
How are you going to stop the local population from still going to that particular place to fight or anywhere to fight? Because at this point, the entire town is so, you know, used to the idea of, well, we just fight each other all day long, every day, no matter where we are. How are they gonna? How are they gonna keep them from misbehaving? Because
the movie presents it as Billy Magnuson is paying these guys to go and cause trouble so that he can buy the bar. I don't think it's that everybody in Glass Key.
No.
Oh, 5:30. You know what that means?
No. Everyone in Glass Key at 5:30 is like quitting time.
Time to punch some jaws.
Time to punch. The film allows you to interpret this in any way you want.
I guess.
And that's Roadhouse.
Da-da-da.
Not great.
Not particularly.
But why not? Here's a warning.
Why?
If you've never seen the original, don't watch this new one.
Oh, no.
Watch the old one. The old one is the greatest.
I mean, my first
vote
would
be... The old one is the greatest.
My first vote would be neither, but I'm thinking, but you have to watch one.
You don't understand.
Watch the OG.
You don't understand cinema, Alonzo, and I'm here to help you with that.
Well, that's...
That's why I'm in your life.
I'm so glad after 14 years of this podcast, we're still working out these issues.
We're almost at 14. We're at 13 and a half.
Okay, fine.
All right. But let's not age us... Too quick.
We have letters.
Yeah, we do. I'm going to pull them up.
Hurrah.
Larry. Talking about Nicole Kidman.
Mm.
And AMC.
Yes.
Saint Nicole Kidman of AMC. Did you guys know that Nicole Kidman and her creative team created that whole original AMC spot?
Mm.
With input from AMC, of course. Her company hired everyone from the director to the grips, and they filmed it themselves. I read about that sometime last year. It's time for a new one, I guess?
Huh.
Well, I would like it more than the remix.
I knew that Billy Ray wrote it, and like that she collaborated on that somewhat. I didn't realize that she was the driving force behind the whole thing.
It's cool. Oh, here we go. Michelle, we're back. Listen, you guys. We're just going to take this Robbie Williams bit to the end. All right? We've made our bed. We're going to lie in it.
I guess so.
With Robbie. And he'll like it. He said he would, anyway.
The listeners have demanded
Was he just having us on?
Who can say?
Michelle says, I loved the whole Robbie Williams letter section. I haven't thought about him in years. But I also identify as a straight white gal who studied abroad in the late 90s, early aughts, so he was definitely in my wheelhouse.
He's got that demo locked down.
For sure. Forever. Holly says, did you know Robbie Williams got really into aliens and alien abduction for a long time? Here's a podcast /BBC thing he did with John Ronson on this. She links to it. If you want to go to YouTube, there's a Robbie Williams Talks About Aliens podcast.
that scans somehow.
Andrew asks, Alonzo, do you plan to do a book signing tour when Hollywood Pride comes out?
Tour might be putting too fine a point on it, but I am trying to appear in as many places as will have me. Definitely got some stuff, looks like, lined up for Los Angeles and in a beautiful Palm Springs. But I am talking to folks in various cities all over the country, trying to work out a way to go do that. Yeah. So, believe me.
Different places.
If and when those all happen, you'll be hearing about it, I assure
you. Ad nauseum.
Yes.
Yeah.
But thank you for asking.
Atlas. Subject line, sing about cat food while you're winning. I already know what this is about.
Yeah.
This is my first email that I've sent you, despite listening to this podcast since 2016.
Wow.
Alice, thank you.
I mean, appreciate it.
Anybody who doesn't give up after one episode.
You're our kind of people.
You have my adoration forever. I previously drafted an email about how much listening to you both thoughtfully talk about films and their context in the world really helped me through some tough times, pre and during pandemic. Mm-hmm. And okay. I also thought of you both when a local rep cinema showed Happy Hour during the Hamaguchi Drive My Car run after hearing you talk about it so many years before. It was amazing, and it had two intermissions. Well, it deserves two intermissions. It's five hours long. I never sent those emails because they ended up being many paragraphs long and felt a bit much. Listen.
Bring it.
Go on. Listen, anybody want to send us an email that's a bit much? We might not read the whole thing on the air or whatever, and you can even tell us don't read this if you want. But we love hearing.
Share your thoughts.
We love hearing from y'all, especially if you, you know, are nice to us.
Yes.
And not yelling at us.
All the more so.
But I felt compelled to email now to let you know that Robbie Williams is currently advertising cat food in Britain right now.
Well, okay then.
With a song he composed for the advert called It's Great to Be a Cat. And I hope they put this in the film. Thanks for everything, Alice in London.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it? Could they use it as a tie-in with Cats?
Why wasn't he in the movie Cats?
Leaving money on the table. One of the many things wrong with that film. Not enough Robbie Williams in it.
Wilson says, this just in, regarding Robbie Williams' film and product promotion.
Mm.
Robbie Williams' music will not be used in Downey commercials in association with the upcoming film about his life. Product partnership has been announced. Hellman's Dijonnaise, creamy Dijon mustard.
Oh, okay. I don't know if he's kidding or not, but I believe it.
Is this an April Fool's? I don't know what's real and what's not anymore.
It all seems plausible somehow.
The thing is about Robbie Williams is that I don't know enough to know, like, what's a joke and what's not.
I'm going to take the cat food thing as gospel because Alice in London would
Alice wouldn't lie to us.
Steer us wrong.
Yeah. But what about this mustard? Dijonnaise. I do need to know. And that's it for the letters.
I don't want to rock Dijonnaise.
Why don't you workshop those jokes before?
I was trying desperately to think of what
before would, you get on a
where
microphone.
Dijonnaise would fit into a Robbie Williams song. It doesn't. And rock
Dijonnaise
was the first thing that came to mind.
Why don't you let somebody who knows his songs better find the right one with Dijonnaise?
Why don't you
read
the 5-star review that we received
this
week?
Oh, we got a 5-star review?
We did.
Oh, wait.
Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, y'all, and we will read it on the air.
I mean, maybe. Why don't you talk about Patreon while I'm looking at that 5-star review? We have a Patreon.
You know what?
It's April 1st, so I know for a fact that we have a Patreon because I looked at it this morning and all y'all's cards got declined.
There is a Robbie Williams documentary on Netflix that we weren't going to watch, but because he is the ubiquitous symbol of our letters column.
Now that we're all talking about it constantly,
Are we going to talk about the Robbie Williams Netflix documentary? On LKTV.
Right.
What's LKTV, you ask? It's a podcast of the television hosted by the two of us, and it's one of several things that our Patreon members get exclusively. Starting at the $1 level, you get a daily recommendation of something called LKRX, and we do Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, where we take about 20 to 30 minutes to just dive into one specific movie.
Although we did just talk about Xanadu for about 50 minutes.
Well, that was because we had Dennis Hensley,
with our friend Dennis.
And, you know, he's got stories to share. Here's the thing. Once you become a Patreon member, you have access to the whole back catalog. And that Xanadu episode was our 100th Linoleum Knife Presents
It was.
Linoleum Knife. So you've got a whole bunch of episodes you could dig back into and enjoy. At higher levels, you get LKTV, and then you also get Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics. You get monthly club meetings where we stream movies online and hang out in Discord and talk while they're running. You get Linoleum Nights, which we record live on Facebook on Sunday mornings, and curse and talk about just any old thing.
We do. That's the one with cussing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And talk about just any old thing that we want to.
Like, that's some kind of selling point. I think it's funny. Every time you bring it up, you're like, that's where we swear.
Well, because...
Like, no one cares about that. It's
I think they do.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think it's a standout among our other productions.
When you hear the other podcasts that we do, this one and all the other Patreon ones included, except Linoleum Nights, we like to have our language be nice in case you have a little five-year-old in the car with you or whatever, but not on Linoleum Nights.
Linoleum Nights,
that is correct.
All bets are off. So anyway, go
we
to
say
Patreon.
Real dirty stuff on Linoleum
it's
Nights.
It's true.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check it out. See which one is good for you. And, you know, it's just a reminder that this show, Linoleum Knife, will always be free. But, you know, stuff out on the internet, people are creating it. And, you know, maybe those people deserve some remuneration for that. But you, in return, get all this great extra shows and stuff.
I don't think we deserve remuneration. I think we've got a product to sell.
Yeah.
And if y'all want to buy it,
it's at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yeah. This is not we're not busking.
No.
You're in our
department. It's a pyramid scheme.
You are in our department store, and we are the snooty sales clerks.
Yes.
Who would like to sell you more podcasts.
This show is the spritz of perfume that you get
right.
for nothing.
When you don't even want it. You're walking into Macy's.
Exactly, and you're like assaulted with it.
In your face.
But if you want the gift pack featuring the talcum and the 12-ounce eau de toilette.
Talcum.
And the beach towel, then you got to go to Patreon.
I found the 5-star review.
Good.
All right. It's from So Declined. Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite of being so inclined.
You know? I guess. One guy has a roast in the oven. I'm one guy. One guy has a roast in the oven, but he takes time to explain to his lovable husband that Beau Travail, back to Beau Travail again, with its heartbreaking and hilarious final scene, is a film delicacy comparable to other great films they have both reviewed, like Force Majeure. That's the 5-star review.
Well, thank you, So Declined.
Yeah.
We appreciate you listening and that you pick up on all the niceties of this program.
Right.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. And again, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts the way So Declined did. We will read it on the air. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify and iHeartRadio and YouTube Music and Amazon Music and, you know, just all the places. You can hear me on other podcasts. Christy Lemire and I have a show called Breakfast All Day. It's a YouTube program, but it's also available as a podcast. You can hear me on Maximum Film on the Maximum Fun Network. And if you were involved in Max Fun Drive this year, if you were a new Max Fun member or if you boosted or upgraded, thank you for that. We appreciate it. We smashed through all of our stretch goals, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
And now Dre and I have to learn how to play Warhammer 40K from Iffy.
I want to watch you paint.
I'm not painting anything.
Miniature.
That's a
Warhammer
imitation of heartbreak.
Figures. I think that's what you should do.
And of course, you can hear me on Deck the Hallmark. And a quick reminder again that Hollywood Pride is out May 14th. It's a book. It's an audio book. It's an ebook. It's all the books.
Yes.
You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us at linoleumcast at Instagram and Blue Sky and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. See what he's up to at blueblu.bandcamp.com. We'll be back next time with more. Until then.
Goodbye.